This is Leo Moran from the Saw Doctors, and you're listening to the Skinny and Hooley Show on WCEV 1450 AM.
It's the Skinny and Hooley Show.
Listoon Varna. How's it going there, everybody from Cork?
Hi, everybody. It's your old pal, Mike Houlihan. And welcome once again to another Best of the Skinny and Hooley Show. We're headed off to Ireland, but we're making sure that you have plenty to listen to and some very entertaining interviews that we've conducted over the years. We're going to start off with an interview with one of Hollywood's most famous character actors, M. Emmett Walsh. He was doing a play at Steppenwolf when he dropped by to say hello to Skinny and Hooley. I think you'll get a kick out of this one. Stay tuned for M. Emmett Walsh.
Now, Skinny, Mr. Walsh has been in over 114 films. And this is radio, so folks can't, but you go to our website and you'll see his face and remember him for all those great films like Blood Simple.
Looked a lot like Redford.
Yes, he's been in many films with Redford, including Brubaker. Clean and Sober, Little Big Man, Serpico, Blade Runner.
The Jerk. Straight Time, Slapshot, Airport 77.
Yes. How about, you know what, somebody called me last night.
Unbelievable.
Somebody called me last night and said, when you get him in there, ask him about Back to School, if the Triple Lindy was for real, you know, when you were the swimming coach and Rodney Dangerfield did the Triple Lindy.
That's one of God's gentlemen, Rodney Dangerfield.
I know. I loved him. Big fan.
Well, it was difficult to be around. But the Triple Lindy, yeah, you do your Hamlet and your Macbeth and everything, you know, and then they turn around and they talk about the Triple Lindy or you're using the whole fist doc or, you know, there are all these other movies that, you know, I didn't pay any attention to, you know.
Well, this is the Skinny and Hooley Show. We're kind of lowbrow here.
I can see that looking at you.
Yes, thank you.
Very good.
All right, now let's tell everybody at the play. It's at Steppenwolf. It's terrific. Got rave reviews. I saw it Saturday, and it's a great play by the new Irish playwright, Conor McPherson. Go to steppenwolf.org to get tickets and learn more about it and what the times are. But I got to tell you, it's a great, and it's only an hour and 40 minutes. So,
well, that's easy for you to say.
Yeah. You know, well, you were backstage. Yeah, you didn't have to take a leak.
No, I'm on too much for me, but I'm on enough. Curtain goes up and it plays and then you go home.
Now, you're right at the top standing on stage when it starts, right? Wasn't that you standing there?
I didn't have anything to do with that.
Yeah.
You know, I do wardrobe changes.
Oh, okay.
Good.
And he plays the uncle of this bust out guy who lives in his house with his weirdo buddy and
Michael. What was the first movie you were in, or how long have you been in movies?
I don't know.
When did your career start?
That list I gave you is chronological. So
okay.
If you went to the very first one on it, which must be, I don't know what it was way back there.
Scorpion King.
No.
Oh, that's television.
Calvary.
You would have to go back.
Calvary's the newest one.
Back with your first here, right?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Wow.
What was it? What were the first things?
It says Calvary.
No, it's Iron Giant. Calvary was the most recent.
Oh.
Yeah.
I got it.
Iron Giant.
This would be the first.
Oh, there's.
This is the last thing I did. Oh. This is the first thing I did.
Oh, I didn't
realize. I'm sure your radio audience is loving the
end of the road. Midnight Cowboy. You were in Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah. You know, I did a little turn. Yeah, I was on a bus coming up with John Voight. You know,
that was also in Carrot Top, chairman of the board.
Hey,
somebody said, did you turn down anything?
I wish I could say that, you know, every time I made a choice, it was out of two or three things. It wasn't, I just kept trucking.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in northern Vermont, way up on the border with Quebec, 60 miles from Montreal. My father, my grandfather, my brother were all U.S. Customs officers on the border, trying to keep the frogs out.
Uh-huh.
See, in my hometown was 80% French-Canadian. So if I went to church on Sunday, you know, and wanted didn't want to listen to French, I had to do the 7 o'clock mass. 8:30 and 10 o'clock were French sermon.
I mean, no kidding.
And I never learned it. I can't even say the Our Father now. And I had the nuns for 5 years. I mean, the only mark I ever got in my life lower than French was deportment. I was a total pill.
And you're second generation Irish, you were telling me.
My father's first. Yeah, I'm second generation. They came over The Sullivans, my mother's family is a Sullivan, and they came over maybe in the neighborhood of 1855, and my wow. father's family maybe like 1860, 61, you know. The Sullivans went into
Canada, probably.
Canada, yeah. And the others came up out of New York somewhere, uh-huh. the Walshes, you know. But it was all, you know, fleeing, you know, getting yeah. out. And they were... They were Cork and Clare, you know, uh-huh. and they were educated. I mean, you know, they weren't peasant people,
right?
You know, and so they scraped the money, and then somebody went over, and somebody brought somebody, and you know, they kept doing that,
right?
You know, type of thing.
That's interesting. So you started in Vermont, Raising then did you
Arizona.
Go to New York? Did you go to New York when you started acting?
Well, I went to college up in northern New York State. You know, I have a degree in marketing and business administration from Clarkson, C-L-A-R-K-S-O, and Clarkson College, well, the of which are not too proud of me. And then I went down and went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York for 2 years. And that was after that. But I got to New York and I didn't know anything. I'd been deaf in one ear since the time I was three. I had a mastoid condition when I was a kid. And I grew up in Vermont, and I said things like, you know, I went to New York, I wanted to do Shaw, Shakespeare, Moliere. You know, intellectually, I was there. But I said things like, Pfeffer. And they said, what? I said, Pfeffer. And they said, what are you saying? What did you want to go and do that for? What Pfeffer? You know, I said, holy. You know, I said, you want to do Shaw? And I said, they understand me at home. So when I got to New York, I had to, you know, I had to realize that I was not going to do Shaw and Shakespeare and Moliere, you know. And I had to find out what I could eventually do. And it's a lifetime, you know, you spend a long time. And, you know, I have no idea how it works. There are 115,000 members of the Screen Actors right. Guild. That's a union that does
more. Right.
I mean, 115,000. And, you know, one time that they wanted it done, there were 10 of us. There was, you know, Charlie Durning or Bruce Dennehy or, you know, and
right.
they'd come and get us. I don't have no idea how you climb over 115,000 bodies to get, you know,
right.
to get some of the work.
Most of them are
unemployed. I've been very fortunate, you know, but what the heck.
Who's your favorite actor?
Who's your favorite that you worked with?
Oh, yeah.
I don't I'd have to think on that one.
You know,
I've watched all my life. I've watched other people work, and yeah. I'm a fan. I'm not a critic. I watch them and say, "Yeah, that's good. That's good." Or, you know, right. he missed there, but he's still good. You know, yeah.
right. Who are some of the real? Give us some of the names of the real good ones you've worked with. You said John Voight.
Well, that was Dustin Hoffman's film.
Yeah,
you know, Midnight Cowboy. I would Redford and you know Paul Newman and go all through I worked with everybody
yeah.
at one time or
you
another.
You know, you had an interesting thing. I was watching last night, and you compared it to a tennis match when you come on stage or when you get in the scene and you're bouncing the ball back and forth with these guys.
Well, yeah. Well, what it is basically, good acting is a tennis match. You hit the ball and the other guy returns it. And I play hardball. I mean, you know, I'm there to help the situation. They want whatever it is I do. And if I walk in there and it's a really good actor, he says, I ain't going to let Walsh win. You know, and he hits it and I hit it and the audience goes, you know, and that's what makes the excitement, the drama of it.
Right.
And I'm hired for that. I'm hired, you know, to make those little things work. And they're not writing movies for me, but I understood my place and I understood how to do it. And if they didn't do it, I'd kill them. I mean, you know, you just didn't watch
right
them. You didn't watch them. You know, I just said, okay, fine. You don't want to be watched? I'll take it. You know,
right.
You know, if that makes any sense on the radio.
Yes, it does.
You play a lot of evil guys, too, and cheerfully evil. That's almost like your signature bit is the smiling bad guy.
I had an acting teacher once said that, the villain, the worst guy in the world, is still married with a couple of little kids that he takes out to the park. It's not villain.
Yeah.
You know, and it's... he's got the job where he's got to clean the pistol and go out and shoot somebody and go home and bring the milk for the breakfast for the next day, you know. And it's a it's kind of finding a way to take the curse off some of the stuff. But I don't think I play only villains. Although at one time, I looked at the end of the year and I'd done 10 movies and I'd been shot in 8 of them.
Yeah.
And I said, they hired me because I'm talented, or I give them a wide body to put all kinds of squibs on, type of thing.
I was watching last night that scene where you get shot in Blood Simple, and you're laying under the sink. It's great.
Well, that's where they stabbed me in the hand.
Oh, that's through the window.
Yeah. It's one of the great scenes, the Coen Brothers. It's a Coen Brothers first film. Every time the Coen Brothers do a movie, I did their second one too, Raising Arizona.
Also a great film.
Yeah, but every time the Coen Brothers do a movie, they talk about, you know, brings my career up again or something.
Yeah.
But that's funny stuff. That's good stuff.
Now, you're kind of a good guy in this play, although you can be kind of cantankerous, but you see that you care about your nephew at the same time, which is an interesting part of the play, I think, is the guy, the lead guy, Fran Guinan's part, he's a dope and a bum, but he still has a good heart. And even your character gets into some of that too, worrying about the kid and stuff.
It's a real family Irish play. These are not cerebral intellectual giants. They're just people trying to get along.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know what the audience is seeing, you know, per se. You watch it, and everybody's just trying to get along and get through, and there are ups and downs to it, but they're going no place.
Yeah,
you know, even when it ends, you kind of wonder, where are they now?
Yeah,
you know, what's going to happen? But they came to me, and I was just sitting around, and the agent said, get him out of town. He just bothered me. So they sent me to Chicago, you know, type of thing. But
we're talking to M. Emmett Walsh. He's starring in the new play, The Night Alive, at Steppenwolf. You got to go see it. It's running through November 16th. Just opened, got rave reviews, starring Frances Guinan. And it's written by the new Irish playwright. Connor McPherson. And M. Emmett Walsh. It's good for you to come in and do this, because...
I come in and talk to you guys, or come in and do the play?
Yes, that too.
Yeah. The good part about it was we're not cerebral or
intellectual
giants. I hope you gathered that up.
I can look and see that.
You know, now I hate to ask you this, but isn't it kind of, do you guys do 8 shows a week still?
Yeah, 6 nights and 2 matinees.
That's not easy.
Wow.
Monday's the day off. But I've been doing nothing but trying to get the play together for the last 4 months. So finally now I'm, you know, just going and play it for an hour and 40 minutes. And
you've been in Chicago for the last 4 months?
I've been in Chicago. Well, this is the 7th week that I've been in Chicago.
Oh, okay. So they were rehearsing someplace else?
Six weeks of rehearsal and previews and so forth.
Okay.
And I'm an old man. I mean, I'm 70. What am I? 80 years old. And, you know, damn it.
God bless you.
You know, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. So,
well, that's why it is hard doing 8 shows a week.
Did they create the word euthanasia here in Chicago? I mean, I've been trying to buy a cheap pistol, but they're not on the street like they should be, you know.
Oh, you don't know where to go.
They are somewhere. You've got to go
outside. I'm in the wrong area, huh?
Yeah.
Right.
They'll show you how it works, too.
Right.
Yeah. All right, so we want to encourage everybody, get down to the Steppenwolf, see M. Emmett Walsh in The Night Alive. Go to steppenwolf.org. Terrific show.
Emmett, you got a
clatter
ring.
A clatter, yeah. And it also says I'm not affiliated with anything. I want you to know that I've been wearing that a long time.
Uh-huh.
But, the women see that, and then I'm out on Saturday night, you know, and they look at that, and then they look at me, and they say, to hell with them, let them go home alone. You know, doesn't do me a bit of good.
Now, what do you do when you're not working? And you're working all the time, it seems.
No,
like.
I'm a Yankee. You know, uh-huh. I whittle, I knit, I paint, I carve, I do, you know, there's all kinds. I'm a reader, you know, and I do a lot of things. And I'm also an old jock. You know, I was a par golfer for a long time.
Oh, no,
really?
Yeah. You know, and I played the top spot in college. I was runner-up for Vermont Junior State Amateur when I was 17. So, And I'm, you know, I lettered in four sports, so I'm still walking around looking at that. You see a puddle, and you know you can jump it, but you say, I think I'll walk around it. You know, you're still there. You know, you don't give it up. And you know, I'm still ambulatory, so it's, you know, I'm blessed that I'm not just walking around like a cripple.
Now, tell us about what's it, Calvary? Is that what the name of it?
Yeah, oh, that's the one with Brendan Gleeson.
Yeah, yeah. Did you shoot that in Ireland?
Brendan Gleeson's quite a character.
He plays a Catholic priest. He's been married before, has a daughter. It's a really interesting movie, and it might get some attention when they come down.
He's a terrific actor, Brendan Gleeson, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very big over there.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, he's... I saw a film that he did up in northern New England or Nova Scotia or something back earlier in the season, back in April or May. I don't know what it was called.
Now, have you ever put together a clip of all your stuff? That would take hours, I would think, right?
I have a press agent that does all that. Oh, okay. You said you looked at some. Oh, you didn't see a clip. What they used to do the clip, and you had the actual reel. You know, oh. I had the little thing, you know. You know, I had those at one time or another. There was a drama, there was a comedy, you know, the whole thing.
Oh, sure.
There'd be 8 or 10 films taken, you know, in 18 or 20 minutes or something. You know,
I was also watching part of The Jerk last night when you were shooting
He's shooting the cans. You know, it's one of Steve Martin's favorite films. Yeah. You know, it's early on. He just had a play open down there in San Diego, Steve Martin. There's a play he wrote that just opened. I just was reading reviews in the New York Times.
Now, I liked him better when he was a little bit crazy like that, the jerk. Then all of a sudden, he's got sophisticated.
Yeah, he's incredibly smart.
I mean, sure he is.
And
I loved him in My Blue Heaven.
He knows a lot about a lot of things. Of course, there's the music and everything, too. But he knows a lot about painting. And a friend of mine said he bought a painting, you know, what everyone said, you were crazy. You paid $2 million for it or something, you know, and everybody says you're crazy. It was a Hopper.
Oh,
I think it was a Hopper, and they just sold it for like $28 million or something. Wow. But he knows, he, and then he puts it in buy something else. It's not like, you know, sure. That whole thing. But, and nice to have known him. If we cross, I can say hi, and he'll say hi, you know. That's
now, where is your home right now?
I live in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Area called Culver City, right by the LA airport.
Oh, Culver
airport.
City, sure.
Yeah, airport. And I've been there for a long time. And I kept an apartment in New York for a long time. I had a co-op in Manhattan, 45th Street. And I have a house in two summer places side by side up on Lake Champlain, Vermont.
Just
56 miles from Montreal. With you know, that's the whole background's up there.
Right.
So all the relatives that are not in the box are up there in Vermont. You know, when I see them, women have looked at me, as I said, for 80 years and said to hell with them. So it's me and Fluffy. That's my life.
I was just going to ask. I mean, you're still a movie star, don't you get young chicks hitting on you all the time?
I hate to dispel that, but
you're open to that.
I had a couple women maybe I should have married I didn't. A couple women that I wanted to marry that said no. So it's difficult if you. In the beginning, you want it so bad. You know, you're studying, you don't know anything. And if there's that little girl and the little baby in the linoleum floor and you say, honey, I got to go up to Nova Scotia. They're doing a production of The Potting Shed. And I'll be gone for 8 weeks. You keep doing that. Yeah. No civilian can live with you.
Right,
you know, they eventually, you know, and if it's two actors living together, you eventually, one is up and one is down.
Yeah.
And the whole relationship goes crazy with that, too. Oh, you know, and so it's very difficult to be around these people.
Right.
That's great.
You know, and I accept that. Yeah. I mean, I've won some. I've won more than I've lost, you know. Uh-huh. You know, and I have no regrets, you know. And here I am in Chicago, and, you know, they want to interview me, but not let my face be seen.
That's why you're on the
radio.
It's a
familiar lament. We have that same problem.
Yeah. I want to encourage everybody, go see The Night Alive at Steppenwolf, starring our friend now, M. Emmett Walsh.
It's running through November 26th. Is it November 16th? November 16th. Go to steppenwolf.org. It's a great play, Irish play, by Connor McPherson, and you'll dig it. It's really good, and it's great to see you on stage as well as in film and everything. And any words for our audience and the people in Chicago, the Irish-American community in Chicago, you want to tell them anything before you?
No, I can't help you.
Well, that last
well,
bit
we
was
really
very good.
Appreciate yeah. you coming on the show, and thanks. We look forward to seeing the play at Steppenwolf. And I know
are you going to go to it?
Yes.
But you do it before the marathon or after the marathon?
It depends on how I feel after the marathon. Probably
you
after.
Got till November.
You 16th, might need the whole 7 weeks. Huh?
You right. better wait till we get back from Ireland.
Okay. Right. Thank you very much for joining us.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me on,
Mike
fellas.
Walsh from Vermont.
Also known as Swanton, Vermont. His parents were from St. Albans.
All right.
Okay. Thanks.
God bless you so much and good luck.
Thanks so much for coming. And we'll be right back on the Skinny and Hooley Show after these words from our friends.
Attention commercial business owners, industrial business owners, restaurateurs, apartment, condominium, and building maintenance managers. Flood Brothers Disposal and Recycling Service wants to earn your business. When was the last time you checked your garbage disposal rates? How about making a call or emailing for a free quote today at 773-626-5800 or online to floodbrothersdisposal.com. Flood Brothers is one of the last family-owned and operated solid waste recycling and yard waste firms serving metropolitan Chicagoland. Flood Brothers specializes in expert personalized service, extremely competitive pricing, and is backed by the Flood Brothers family name. Call Flood Brothers today. There's no charge other than a phone call to get a free quote. Call 773-626-5800 or go online to floodbrothersdisposal.com. When your name is on the trucks, you work harder to satisfy every customer. Call 773-626-5800. Flood Brothers Disposal and Recycling Service. Your garbage and recycling waste is their bread and butter.
There's only one Irish pub on the Chicago River, and that's Lizzie McNeil's at 400 North McClurg Court. We spend a lot of time there taping the Skinny and Hooley Show at Lizzie's almost every Wednesday night. You can escape the hustle and bustle of Navy Pier and relax at Lizzie McNeil's. Our old pal John Wren is your host. Please say hello when you stop by for one of their ice-cold brews in an authentic Irish pub. One visit and you'll be calling it your hometown hangout. We've been hanging at Lizzie's for going on 7 years now, so join us. When the weather gets nice, they have two outdoor patio areas where you can take advantage of the sunshine and a cafe menu of salad sandwiches and appetizers. Lizzie's also has a great private party room that's perfect for birthdays, graduations, and most nights at Lizzie's, you can meet the elite of Chicago's Irish-American community. So stop by Lizzie McNeil soon, right by the river. Tell them you were sent by Skinny and Hooley.
With a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. Skinny and Hooley Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150.
Smith Village, located in the Beverly neighborhood, is a life plan community that's backed by the strength and experience of Smith Senior Living. At Smith Village, we offer a full continuum of care. Retirement is that unique and special phase of life when you shift from worrying about your to-do list to exploring all the things on your love to-do list. It's also a time to expand your interests, learn something new, make new discoveries. The maintenance-free lifestyle at Smith Village gives you the freedom to do all this and more. And while you're exploring your passions, you'll appreciate the convenience of having dining, housekeeping, utilities, maintenance, social events, fitness classes, and wellness programming all covered by one monthly charge. For a limited time, take advantage of our three-month trial stay program to experience life at Smith Village without the risk of an entrance fee. Ask about our new trial stay program by calling 773-614-6836. That's 773-614-6836. Or visit the website at smithvillage.org.
McCann's Irish Oatmeal. We've been warming the hearts, minds, and souls of the most discriminating oatmeal lovers for over 150 years. From the family farm to your table, enjoy the whole grain goodness of McCann's Irish Oatmeal today, available at your local grocery store.
Walking all the day by tall towers where falcons build their nests. Silver winged they fly, they know the call of freedom in their breasts. I saw black head against the sky, with twisted rocks and run to the sea. Living on your western shore, saw summer sunsets, asked for more. I stood by your Atlantic sea and sang a song for Ireland. Talking all the day with true friends who try to make you stay, telling jokes and news, singing songs to pass the time away. We watched the Galway salmon run like silver darting, dancing in the sun. Living on your western shore, saw summer sunsets, asked for more. Stood by your Atlantic sea and sang a song for Ireland. Drinking all the day in old pubs where fiddlers love to play. Someone touched the bow and he played a reel which seemed so grand and gay. We stood on Dingle Beach and cast in wild foam. We found Atlantic bass. Living on your western shore, saw summer sunsets, asked for more. Stood by your Atlantic sea and sang a song for Ireland. Dreaming in the night, I saw land where no one had to fight. But waking in your dawn, I saw you crying in the morning light. While lying where the falcons fly, they twist and turn all in your hair blue sky, living on your western shore, saw summer sunsets, asked for more, stood by your Atlantic sea and sang a song for Ireland.
Putting your future in the hands of a lawyer can get personal, particularly in personal injury cases. You've got one shot at justice, so you're going to want a guy who thinks like you. Tom Gorman is Southside Irish all the way. He grew up in Holy Redeemer Parish, went to Brother Rice, and yeah, he got a ride to play ball at Notre Dame, played on the undefeated 1988 National Championship football team. After a shoulder injury ended his career, Tom stayed on with the Fighting Irish for his master's and law degree. Tom won the American Jurisprudence Award for trial advocacy at Notre Dame Law School, and he's been a trial lawyer ever since. Tom's practice is devoted exclusively to personal injury and wrongful death. Sure, he's won $1 million verdicts for his clients, but his focus remains on those families and their futures. Tom and his wife, Christine, have lived in Beverly for almost 20 years. And they're raising their five kids in Christ the King Parish, Brother Rice, Mother McCauley, and their oldest son is now at ND as well. Lots of folks have to deal with tragedy. It's good to know there's a guy out there you can count on who'll be in your corner to protect your family. You can call Tom Gorman directly at 312-345-7210 and tell him about your situation. Or go to the website, www.gormantriallaw.com. He's a good guy. There's no charge for the consultation, and you'll meet a new friend that's ready to fight for you and your family. Call Tom Gorman today at 312-345-7210 and tell him your story. This is Mike Houlihan. I support Concern Worldwide. If you want to do something about global poverty, hunger, refugees, the unacceptable suffering of young children, if you want to reach people directly where the need is greatest, you should too. For 50 years, since its grassroots beginnings in Dublin, Concern has saved and changed millions of lives. It's been the proud, relentlessly compassionate face of Ireland to the world. Support Concern today at concernusa.org. That's concernusa.org. There is no more Irish thing you can do.
I'm Brendan O'Brien. Back in June of 1976, a guy opened a saloon on the south side called Riley's Daughter. That guy is my dad, Boz O'Brien. Millions of pints have been poured since then. Our family has quenched the thirst of the south side for over 41 years. The storied history of Riley's Daughter is familiar to generations of friends who've told me their tales of nights they'll never forget at Riley's. Maybe they met their future wife or hubby at Riley's, or maybe they were there for many of our White Sox, Bears, or Notre Dame trips, or maybe their grandmother once bribed the judges in our Irish soda bread contest. We'll never tell. My family has been proud to be part of that over the years. One thing my dad has taught me is that you can't have too many friends. The legacy of Riley's Daughter has been the people we've been lucky enough to meet who stop by and share their good times with us. Today we're back in the South Side, right where we started, at 4010 West 111th Street in Oak Lawn. As Yogi Berra said, it's deja vu all over again. We actually closed the deal on our return the day Yogi died. God rest his soul. 2 years later, we haven't missed a step. If Yogi were alive, we'd tell him. Pull up a stool at Riley's Daughter and make yourself at home. If it's good booze and a friendly chat you're looking for, please stop by and say hello to my dad, Boz, my brother, Danny, or me, Brendan O'Brien. If you don't bring a story, we'll make sure you leave here with one. And if you mention the Skinny and Hooley Show, we'll make sure to put an extra ice cube in that drink of yours. Hope to see you back at Riley's Daughter in Oak Lawn on 111th Street.
Scenes I won't bore, and long ago the I first saw Illinois, but time nor tide nor waters wide could wing my heart away. Forever true it flies to you, my own dear Galway Bay. Shores and creek, the rugged rocks abound. But sweet and green the grass between, as grows on Irish ground. So friendship found, all wealth abound, and love that lives away. Bless every home beside your phone, my own dear Galway Bay. Had I youth's blood and hopeful mood and heart of fire once more, for all the gold the world might hold, I'd never leave your shore. I'd live content wherever God sent, with neighbors old and brave. I'd lay me bones 'neath churchyard beside you, Galway Bay. Blessings of a poor old man be with you night and day. The blessings of a lonely man whose heart will soon be clay. It's all of heaven, alas, of God upon my dying.
And to wrap up our best of the Skinny and Hooley show this week, we couldn't go to Ireland without thinking of our old friend Jimmy Deanahan, who at the time of this interview was the minister for the diaspora in the government of Ireland. He's a good friend and a terrific guy and a Kerry man. So take a listen to Jimmy Deanahan, and Skinny and I will see you all next week. Thanks so much. God bless, and we'll see you later. Bye.
But we're very honored to have our old friend, Minister for the Diaspora, Jimmy Deanahan, who was our host when we were in Ireland and gave us a private tour of the Dáil, and we had a blast, and we're so glad to have you here as our guest tonight. Jimmy, welcome.
Delighted to be with you.
Thank you, pal.
And he's a Kerry man.
He is indeed, yeah.
That makes me more special.
Yes, thanks.
He's from the kingdom. All right, so Jimmy was also a All-Ireland champion, what was it, five times?
Five times, yeah. Right?
Yeah, five, just about.
Yeah, with Munster.
You can talk about it a little bit.
Yeah,
know.
5 times he won the All-Ireland, right?
Yeah,
with your team.
Part of a good team. Actually, when we won the All-Ireland back in the 70s and 80s, we came to Chicago on 2 occasions as champions, playing the All-Stars. So we were out there in Gaelic Park, and I was back there yesterday again, and it's really remarkable what has been achieved in Gaelic Park by the various committees over the years. It's really one of the finest facilities I've been in, and the facilities there are really first class, and you'd feel proud just to be Irish, I suppose, when you go there. They have such a fine facility, and also your Irish American Heritage Center, I was there as well, and I must say they've done a tremendous job there in restoring that old school that they're in, and there are some fine facilities. So you're very lucky here in Chicago to have 2 really fine cultural centers for the Irish population, and also they're catering for every ethnic group, actually, in Chicago.
Let's not get carried away, okay?
No, I'm
St. Patrick's Day.
Well, I must say, I was very impressed. I've been traveling the world since I got this job. Back in July, I've been to Australia and all parts of America and the UK, and those 2 centers are, I must say, really first class. And I was up in Milwaukee today, and they have 2 very fine centers up there as well. They have a fine heritage center. It's an old church, and they left the old church as it was. So the seats are in there and all the rest, and it's a fine performing space. And then you have the Milwaukee Fest, and I must say,
oh, the Irish Fest, that's the best,
spectacular.
Biggest one.
You have 9 people working on it on a permanent basis, and you have 4,000 volunteers. There's no place in the world that you get 4,000 people to volunteer. And they have one of the biggest festivals outside of Ireland. The only festival that would rival with in Ireland is the All-Ireland Flag Ceoil. And they get over 100,000 people over a few days. And I was through where they have it. And I must say, I'd love to be back here
in
next
August.
But the Rosa Tralee is on at the same weekend. So I won't be able to get here for it. But they certainly do a good job. So I must say that Irish culture and heritage and everything to do with Ireland is in very good hands here in Chicago and Milwaukee.
And you are the one that's very involved in leading that up in Ireland too, aren't you? All the cultural activities and bringing people to Ireland, the diaspora and the gathering.
Yeah,
and
I was, well, even in opposition. And the last time I was here with you, it was back in 2010. And I was on your show that time. And I must say that I was surprised with the great response I got from it.
You got
so a lot of
so
people,
many cards and letters.
Yeah, of course. but a lot of people obviously listen to your show.
You know who won it? I have to mention him. He's another All-Ireland guy. PJOD is a very important part of the show. He asked me to give you some of his clips that I deliver. But he is in charge of our obits on the show. So PJ is our obits.
Thank you
scout.
Very much. But I remember that particular time I was here. I was here with the county manager from Kerry. And we had a really good session here with you, and it certainly connected. And I like coming back to Chicago. I've done some fundraising here over the last maybe 25 years or so, especially for projects back at home. And I have a very good friend here, Dave Cahill. You probably know him, Skinny.
Black Dave Cahill.
Wait a second. But did you mention fundraising and Cahill in the same sentence? How does that work?
He's the most generous man I've ever met in my life as regards fundraising. He has made more of a contribution to projects in Ireland than most other people. So.
Oh, David's fantastic. We all know that.
And
he
was very much instrumental in electing Mayor Daley several occasions. And
absolutely.
Very, a really powerful political force.
He's a great political operative.
The late Jean Byrne, she was running for mayor one time, and I was at an event. This happened in Cottaloo Commons in DePaul University, and she was doing an event for women, women's equality. And so I went in and said hello and spoke to her audience about what's happening in Ireland about equality. This was back in 1998. And she asked me, who's that man with you there? I said, that's Dave Cahill. She said, is it Red Dave or Black Dave? I said, it's Black Dave. And she said, well, I was told if I had that guy in my side, I would have been mayor of Chicago.
She still would have been mayor until she died.
Yeah. Well, she would have been, yeah. Yes. So there you are. So Black Dave, Ram Emmanuel, I was walking with him there. Well, he jogged down the street, actually. He didn't walk down the street. But I told him if he wanted to get re-elected, he should call Dave Cahill. So I gave him Dave's phone number.
Oh, that was good. That was very good.
I don't think Dave's going to answer that call.
I don't really know, but I told him, I advised him actually to call Dave and get some advice from him.
Well, that was good political advice, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Jimmy, you're in town for the new exhibit at the Art Institute. What's that all about?
Well, it's very exciting from a number of points of views, I suppose. First of all, it was the idea of a very good friend of mine, Desmond Fitzgerald. He was the Knight of Glen. The Fitzgeralds came to Glen. It's on the Shannon Estuary. If anyone comes from Shannon Airport down by the N69 to Kerry, they'd pass by Glen Castle. They were there. They're there since 1300 in Glen, and great family. And he was very much into vernacular architecture, preservation of old houses and so on. So we worked together for a number of years on a number of projects. So he died some years ago, but this was his wish that there would be an exhibition of 18th century Ireland, Irish art, and here in America. And because there is so much Irish art here in America from the 18th century, obviously it would be better if it was organized, the exhibition here for America. And the Art Institute here in Chicago is doing that. Well, there's a reason for that as well, because Fred and Kay Krebel, Kay is from near me at home in Kerry, they are putting a lot of sponsorship into it, and also they have a number of objects themselves as well that will be on display. There are 300 objects on it from that period. It's from 1690 after the Battle of the Boyne up to before the famine, 1840. So it's the 18th century extended. But there are 26 counties of the whole of Ireland represented in it.
Oh, that's great.
With landscapes, with portraits, with ceramics, with architecture, with silverware, glassware.
Before I forget it, I have ADD, but I just want you to talk a little bit about next year in Ireland.
Yeah, well, it's a very important year. It's the anniversary of the 1916 Rising. So it will be commemorated all during the year, and also there'll be commemorations here in Chicago and other parts of America as well, because America had a huge connection with the 1916 Rising.
Right.
The money to buy guns came from America. I suppose that's nothing new. Yeah. But also some of the personalities like John DeVoy in New York was very instrumental in influencing people like Pierce. And Thomas Clark actually lived here. Five of the leaders of the 1916 Rising spent time here in America. So there was a huge American influence in the 1916 Rising. So we are commemorating it.
Was De Valera born in New York?
He was born here in America, yeah. He wasn't one of the signatories, but he was one of the leaders. O'Rahilly, who is the principal man who's not mentioned that much, maybe because he's a Kerry man, but he was the guy that started the volunteers, and he spent his own money actually in buying arms for the volunteers. And he was the only leader that was shot in action in 1916 when they had to leave the GPO. He was one of the people who charged the barricade. Yeah, he died. Actually, he died overnight, and he wrote a note to his wife in his own blood, actually, funny enough.
Oh.
So it was quite a poignant story. We're commemorating him in Ballylongford, where he was born, close to me at home, on the 9th of April, actually. We're doing a commemoration for him.
But 9th
he
was of April 2016?
No, this 9th of April. Now, we're starting the commemorations already, to get highlight these people, because there will be lots of commemoration next year. 1916 was a Dublin event. It was supposed to happen all over the country, but there were arms being sent in by Germany, and unfortunately there was a mix-up, and they couldn't land the arms, and the ship was scuttled that was bringing in the arms. So they called off. Owen McNeil was in charge of the volunteers, and he sent out a countermanding order around the country. O'Rahilly actually delivered that, but when he went back to Dublin, he discovered that the rising was going on anyway. And he joined in because, as he said himself, you know, I have wound the clock. Now I want to hear it tick. And it was rather romantic. It was really, they had no hope of achieving anything. But what they really wanted to do was, I suppose, revive the spirit of Irish nationalism. Right. And they were very much in a minority. When they were, when they surrendered, when they were going to Kilmainham jail, the public of Dublin, like, spat on them, and they kind of chanted various obscenities at them. But it was when the fact that they were executed that changed the whole mood of the people. But it's a very interesting period in Irish history, and the proclamation has been very much a driving force in Irish
politics. Men and women of Ireland, or women and
that's
men
right.
of...
And the only country that's mentioned in the proclamation is the United States. So that would show you the connection between Ireland and the United States. So we are commemorating it. It was on that Easter week in Dublin, something like only 60 volunteers actually died in Dublin in the fighting. Mostly it was civilians that got killed, about 230. There were maybe over 100 of the British forces and obviously the police. But it was, and there were 40 children killed. So the volunteers actually, there were just 63 altogether. And what happened afterwards, what created the really negative response, I suppose, and what people, what turned against people against, I suppose, the British, was because of the executions also, something like 3,000 people were arrested around the country and taken to various prisons like Frangok. So when these people got together in the prisons, obviously, they planned for the future.
Right.
So it was like a training course for the future. And that's what happened then with the War of Independence afterwards. So it's a seminal moment in Irish history.
It's a great reason to come back to Ireland.
Well, it will be. There'll be a large number of events. But it's commemoration. It's not celebration. It's commemorating. And it has to be done from the primary source and exactly what happened and the testaments of these people that they made afterwards, and to get as much information as possible of what happened, because it has been embellished since in various ways. Politicians have taken various interpretations, and historians, obviously.
I'm shocked.
So the important thing here is that it's done properly and from the primary source and exactly how it happened, and that's the way we want to do it, basically. I was in charge of the commemorations up to last July. I will have something to do with, obviously, the commemorations that will happen here in America as Minister for the Diaspora. But we commemorated a number of events, both north and south. And then in the north, for example, the Larne gun running were commemorated, setting up of the UVF, as the volunteer force, to resist home rule. And also Balmoral and Ulster Day, where the people of Ulster came together and signed the covenant against home rule. And then we had a major commemoration for the Irish volunteers when they were set up in November of 1913. They were set up to campaign and fight for home rule. So the war that would have happened in Ireland, really, I suppose, but for the World War, may have been a war between North and South about home rule.
Oh,
but that never happened. So all of those events passed off very peacefully. They were done respectfully, with a degree of tolerance, and very inclusively. So hopefully next year now will be done in the same spirit.
Right.
And there will be huge emphasis on Irish culture, on education, and the whole artistic element of 1916, because it was really inspired by people like Yeats on the stage of the Abbey, and by Yeats's writing. He didn't mean it to inspire people, but that's what happened. And really, the volunteers and most of the people, what really binded them together, I suppose, was the Gaelic League, the revival of the Irish language. And most of them were in Gaelic League clubs. So that's when they met each other. And that's when, I suppose, they decided to take this particular course of action, and it was as much a blood sacrifice as, you know, any hope of victory. Now, obviously, if the Germans had landed in Ireland, and that mightn't have been desirable either, it may have been different.
Right.
So that's, anyway, it's an important part of our history. I know that people in America are very interested in what's happening in Ireland, always have been. They played a major role, actually, in the peace process in Northern Ireland. So we have matured. It has moved on. It's very complicated.
Right, right.
But in Northern Ireland between Catholic and Protestant.
It's a great film that premiered last September here, A Terrible Beauty. Really? Are you familiar with that? Dave and Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
Just
them
a terrific
on the show,
docudrama. Yeah. They've been on the show a couple of times.
It's very important. But people here in America obviously realize that you have over a million, you know, people who are unionists in Northern Ireland, mostly Protestant, who don't want to come into United Ireland, and I think that has been accepted by everybody now, even the nationalist politicians in Northern Ireland when they signed up to the Good Friday Agreement.
Maybe not everybody. Skinny and Hooley are still, we're still holding out, just so you know, right, Hooley?
Yeah, well, I'm sure, like, Skinny, with your record, that you would make a big impact if you went back there.
We're only kidding.
Jimmy, thanks so much for coming. We got to take a break now. Come back.
Well, thank you very much.
And we'll be back to visit you and I.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started 80 years ago by their grandfather. Today, 15 members of the family still work together. And as in their grandfather's day, they're service-oriented and believe that the only way to do something is the right way. Flood Brothers are price competitive, so you can count on them to exceed your expectations. So contact Flood Brothers for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. And remember their motto, your rubbish is our bread and butter. So call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or at floodbrothersdisposal.com.
When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy and Sons Funeral Home are third-generation family-owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. Robert J. Sheehy and Son Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted, Chicago. At the time, this is one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind, was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of success is evident 98 years later as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. The name Sheehy on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family, and you know you never forget something like that. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike Orico, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff, take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves in offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy and Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.